Thursday on Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Glad to be back for another day. Hope you guys aren't getting sick of me. Lots of shows this week. We put the Twins season preview show in between the regular episode yesterday and today. So really, three Daily Deliveries coming at you in about a 24-hour span. But hey, the more the merrier, right? It's all good. It's all stuff you probably want to hear, hopefully. And this is the time of year where we've got a lot of content, so why not break it up a little bit more? Today, no exception. Ben Gessling from the Star Tribune joins me to talk Vikings in a little while here. He was at the owners' meetings in Orlando earlier this week. Got some really good insights down there on how the Vikings will go about trying to identify the quarterback they want, you know, going beyond just these pro days, and today is Drake May's pro day, going beyond just kind of like the scripted throws that these guys will make at their pro days, and really getting to know these guys as they try to sort out, okay, how far up do they want to try to move in the draft? How far up do they need to go? Who are they really targeting to take over for the departed Kirk Cousins? So Ben and I will talk about that in addition to a few other things here in just a few minutes. Back half of the show, like I said, lots to get to. Some Gophers men's basketball transfer portal stuff. Got to get to a little Gophers men's hockey with that NCAA tournament play beginning today as they try to win two games and get to XL Energy Center for the Frozen Four. First, though, what did I miss? Got to start with the Timberwolves, then the Twins. Kind of intertwined thoughts to a certain degree. Wolves beat the Pistons last night, 106-91. A little bit of a paint-by-numbers victory. Certainly wasn't the prettiest game, but what I appreciate about it is two things. One, it was a professional effort. It was a professional effort from a team that last year, like we've talked about numerous times, struggled against the really bad teams in the NBA. The Pistons are certainly one of the really bad teams in the NBA. They've only won 12 games all season. The Wolves have been the Pistons before. They've been that team trying to get out of first gear, trying to get out of the basement of the league. The Wolves have been there, believe me. I've watched a lot of games where the Wolves were in that position, not the position they're in right now. You give a team like that a little bit of hope, sometimes it can go sideways. Wolves were down 5 in the third quarter of Wednesday's game. I was watching that for a while. They were down 60-55. Even then, there was no doubt in my mind the Wolves were going to win that game, and they did relatively handily at the end. It was a professional effort led by veterans. Rudy Gobert and Kyle Anderson were singled out by head coach Chris Finch. Let's listen to a few of his comments after the game, because they really mirrored what I thought of the approach and how the whole game went.
You ask yourself sometimes, it's a pretty simple question, like, for who is this game more important? You know, there's only one answer for that. You know, so we needed it. Wasn't our best effort, but defense was strong when we needed it to be, and found enough offense. So,
and Detroit had some life there, especially coming out of the half. How much of a difference, at least on the offensive end, did Kyle Anderson make for you coming off the bench in that?
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, just his scoring, being able to get to the heart of the defense, make the right play. You know, I thought he was really, really good. J-Mac, obviously good, hit some timely shots. Nikhil, really good. But I thought in many ways the MVP of the game was Rudy. Rudy on the floor, they struggled to score. Rudy battling on the offensive glass. He kept a lot of things alive when we had nothing else going offensively. Kind of batted it out. We were able to hit a couple of threes off the back of that. And they were timely plays, too. Kyle and Rudy for me were the keys to the game.
Indeed, not their best game, right? Not the, you know, you're not going to frame that game and hang it up, but you needed to have that one. You needed to keep pace in the Western Conference. And oh, by the way, you got a lot of help. The Nuggets lost to the Suns. Thunder lost in overtime to the red hot Houston Rockets. Rockets have won 10 games in a row. They are just a game behind the Warriors now to get into that final play-in spot. The Rockets 10 in a row, 37-35. Now Warriors 38-34. The Warriors did win last night as well, but the battle for the last play-in spot intensifying quite a bit. That's interesting, but the Wolves gain ground on both of the teams at the top of the standings. So the Wolves now just a half a game behind Denver now, with a huge game looming tomorrow night at Target Center between those two. They could take over sole possession of first place in the West if things break a certain way, and they are now tied with the Thunder in the West after that Thunder loss. So just a half game back of the Nuggets, tied with the Thunder, 50-22. Now, that brings me to the other part of the equation here. 50-22, 50 wins for just the fifth time in franchise history. Three of those seasons ended with 50, 50, and 51 wins. So really, this is already the second best season in franchise history. If we just full stop right here, obviously the season's going to go on. Obviously they're going to win some more games. Don't know how many more, but they're going to get past 51. This is going to be at least the second best season in franchise history. What we don't know yet is whether they can approach and touch best season in franchise history status. That, of course, was 20 years ago. The only time they made a playoff run, the only time they even won a playoff series. They made it to the Western Conference Finals. You guys are all aware of that. The Kevin Garnett MVP year, Latrell Sprewell, Sam Cassell, good supporting cast. That is the mark they are shooting for, at least by comparison in franchise history. But this is already second best season in franchise history. Can they get that far this year? Can they win 58 games? That would mean going 8-2 down the stretch. That will be a tall task. They've got to play Denver twice. They've got to play Phoenix twice. I think they've got Houston somewhere in there. I think they got the Lakers again. How many more regular season games will they win? But like Chris Finch said, this was a must win in this game to keep pace, to kind of get up there in the seedings, to make sure you're staying competitive. And as it turned out, they gained ground on the two teams they're battling in the Western Conference. So this is a team, a franchise that has seen way more bad seasons than good. They had that good stretch. I mean, I think we overlooked that a little bit. We've kind of focused in on that year 20 years ago. But, you know, they had a really good run of at least above average competent play, starting with the 99-2000 season, 50 wins, 47 the year after that, 50 the year after that, 51 the year after that, then the 58-win season. Then they haven't been as good as that until now. 50-22 right now, still 10 games left in this season. If they can close this out strong, again, this is at least the second best year. Can it be the best? Can it approach the best? That would mean a playoff run. That would mean a strong finish to the regular season, and that is what we still do not know yet. Now, tying that in with the Twins really quick, they open their season today. This is opening day. You're wondering, why are you not talking a whole lot more about opening day, the Twins? Well, we did that whole special podcast yesterday, so that is where you will find the vast majority of your Twins content. Of course, we will talk more Twins on tomorrow's show off of today's opener in Kansas City. Pablo Lopez pitching for the Twins. I just wanted to take a moment to talk about how, you know, we talk about the Wolves haven't won a playoff series in 20 years. We talk about the Wild haven't won a playoff series in like a decade. Talk about the Vikings haven't won a playoff game in like 5 years, right? The 2019 season. We talk about the Twins. They won a playoff series like 5 months ago. This is a team that I think the narrative, at least in my end, has gotten away a little bit. It's gotten it a little straight, a little bit too far into the negative this offseason, worrying a little bit too much about the pitching. These are legitimate concerns. These are also solvable problems as the year goes around, and they're not even problems yet. They're just concerns. They're worries about how things could play out if there are more injuries, if the guys they're counting on aren't as good as they think they are. That said, they've earned a certain amount of latitude by winning three of the last five division titles, by making the playoffs four of the 7 years under Derek Falvey and Thad Levine. This is a team, an organization that does deserve some of the benefit of the doubt, and there are legitimate reasons to be optimistic about this team. Like Bobby Nightingale and I talked about on the special episode yesterday, number one, it starts with offense, and if you're talking about the offense, number one, it starts with Royce Lewis. This guy has the potential to be their first true superstar in a very long time. You put Joe Mauer, obviously, into the superstar category because he was an MVP, because he's a Hall of Famer now. But he was never that rah-rah kind of lead-by-example, lead, you know, kind of charge onto the field, be demonstrative kind of guy. Different kind of leader. Not saying that's good or bad, just saying it's different. In terms of charisma, the guys I've talked to, Lavelle Neal III, when I talked to him about this last year during the playoff run, evoked names like Torrey Hunter, evoked names like Kirby Puckett in terms of the charisma, the leadership ability of Royce Lewis. It starts right there with this team. Obviously, the health of Byron Buxton, the health of Carlos Correa, the opportunity this lineup has to score a lot of runs. But Royce Lewis, in and of himself, is a reason to be optimistic about this team right now. So I want to carry a little bit of that energy into the season. I know there's concerns. I've talked a lot about those concerns. Right now, I'm going to leave all those concerns behind and just try to watch this team with a fresh set of eyes and see if they can build off of last year's playoff streak ending, playoff series winning result.
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
Glad to be joined today by Ben Gessling from the Star Tribune. Owners meetings this week in Orlando, Ben. Interesting stuff to come out of it. Some league stuff, but also more access to Kevin O'Connell, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, things like that. Just kind of giving us a glimpse into the process the Vikings are going to be going through. Again, not guaranteed they're going to draft a quarterback, but they are giving strong, strong signals that that is the direction they're heading and kind of having a plan in place with how they are going to evaluate these various draft-eligible quarterbacks.
Yeah, the short version, I would say, is if you don't see Kevin O'Connell at Pro Days this week, Jaden Daniels on Wednesday, Drake May on Thursday, I believe it is, don't get too worked up about it. We kind of did this after the J.J. McCarthy Pro Day at Michigan. It was, hey, where's Kevin O'Connell? Why aren't they looking at him? They are. There is a different process that they're using, and I think Kevin O'Connell is, I believe, has a couple of private workouts and meetings set up later this week, presumably with those guys. The meetings this week are down in Orlando, so I believe he's doing some family stuff down here before kind of making those trips. But the pro days are not central to their process for this reason. A pro day is scripted by whether it's the player's private trainer, the coaches at the college, the people that are getting that player ready for the draft are the ones that are in charge of what that player does in the pro day. So if you're a coach that says, we want to see you do this, I mean, you can ask for that. And sometimes you certainly see coaches at these things jump in and ask them to run a drill or kind of take command of things a little bit. But generally, especially with a quarterback, it is scripted ahead of time, and it is not really customized to what you want to see. So Kevin O'Connell, in a previous job, was getting quarterbacks like Johnny Manziel, Marcus Mariota ready for, I believe, the combine. But he knows this process pretty well. He went through it. I mean, he was drafted. He was a third-round pick by the Patriots. So he knows all of the things that go into this, and he basically has said, I don't want to do it this way. What I want to be able to do is – have a meeting and a workout with these quarterbacks that as closely as possible simulates what a day or a week would be like with them if they become our quarterback. So it's everything from let's get in the film room and you walk me through your college offense so I can see how you're being coached, to let's put the Vikings tape, let's put the Vikings playbook up there, and I'm going to teach you a little bit of that, and then we're going to go out on the field. And I'm going to say, hey, that thing I just taught you, I want you to run this concept or run this with a different drop back or footwork than you've typically done. But this is how we do it. So let's see it. And then if it doesn't work, it's how does this guy take coaching? It's how does he receive constructive criticism? How quickly does he process what you're asking him to do and change his technique to doing it? It's all of those things. And then O'Connell said, we typically pick up the tab, obviously, for lunches, but we will tell a player a lot of times if it's on campus, hey, take me to your favorite spot, because they want to see how the player interacts with people, other students on campus, people they might see in the football building, people they might see at the restaurant. It's all of these sort of ideas of trying to pull back the layers from the draft process, which for a lot of these players has gotten really packaged, has gotten really scripted. There is a lot that goes into making these players look as perfect and pristine as possible, and the Vikings are trying as much as they can to say, let's get to see the real thing, because it, especially with a quarterback, you're going to be working with this guy and hitching your fortunes to him for a long time, and for Kevin O'Connell, it's trying to build relationships and seeing how that's going to go if they draft him, as best as you can simulate it in a private workout, in a private meeting.
Obviously the Vikings have gone through the draft process with other quarterbacks before, not with this regime, obviously, but, you know, they took Teddy Bridgewater ultimately in the first round in 2014. They went with, you know, drafted Ponder in 2011, or just like any other, you know, processes throughout the years. Do you get the sense this is more involved, different than a lot of teams do, or is this pretty, I don't want to say standard practice, but is this copied by other teams? Is this not just a Kevin O'Connell thing?
I'm sure a lot of teams have something similar to this, and there are probably teams that do it differently, that put more or less emphasis on pro days and try to just do different things. I know when the Vikings were looking at Teddy Bridgewater, a lot of it was private workouts and saying, we want you to run this concept in our offense. And I think that's why a lot of coaches prefer that, is just to say, I don't really need to see what you did in college, because I already have it on film. I want to see how much I can translate this to, you are now an NFL quarterback, and we are asking you to do this. We are asking you to read things differently, or drop back differently, or drop back at all. I mean, there's so many college quarterbacks that don't get asked to do that anymore.
Right.
And the Vikings obviously are going to make their quarterbacks do that. So I think for a lot of coaches, I'm sure a lot of teams have a similar process to this, but it was interesting to hear his. I think a lot of the let's see how you fit in our culture stuff may be unique to Kevin O'Connell. It's certainly something he's emphasized a lot over the years and probably has learned over the course of his time. I would bet Sean McVay has had a similar process to this. And, you know, a lot of it probably gets passed down, especially when you go from place to place. But I think specifically for him, it's been born out of having been through this himself, having done this in a number of different places, and being able to fine tune it a little more to what he wants to get out of those meetings.
Did he tell everybody down in Orlando who they were targeting? Did we spill the state secrets, or where? Well, I guess it's a funny way of saying, like, are we any closer?
It was not for lack of effort, I will say that.
I'm sure. Are we any closer to knowing at least like the number of players they like, or the number of players they would consider making a fairly significant move up for? Because, you know, they have this draft capital now, the 11 and the 23 pick. There's mock drafts almost every day. Almost all of them have the Vikings moving up in some fashion. So it's not a secret what they're trying to do. They haven't even made this a secret. What we don't essentially know, or what I don't know yet, is like, who do they actually really like in all this? And they're not going to tell us, but do we have a sense of like how many they like, what they're looking for exactly, who fits their system? What does it even mean to say you fit into the Viking system?
Yeah, I think the one of the more interesting things I learned down here this week, because there's kind of been these four at the top. It's Caleb Williams, and then in some order, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy. These are kind of the four that get talked about. So one of the things I asked O'Connell about the other day was this concept of, do you change your offense for that player? Or do you kind of say, come in and do what we do? And he said it's a partnership. You are building an offense that fits the player. But then he kind of started with a little bit of a tangent about the running quarterback thing again. It was a lot of discussion of, it's hard to make a running quarterback the center of your system, because he is worried about the quarterback getting hurt. He is worried about how much you can build an offense, a passing game off of that. And he kind of came back to something we heard him say a lot, I think, with regard to Josh Dobbs at times. It was, you know, accuracy, rhythm, timing. I mean, we've all heard him talk about these things. But he went back to it again, which tells you these are not things that were specific to Kirk Cousins. It is a lot of how he thinks the position needs to be played in the NFL. And if you can't do those things on time and make reads quickly and be able to go, okay, one is covered, let's see where two and three are at, and then get through everything as a primary way of moving the ball. I mean, athleticism on top of that is great, but I don't think he wants that. I don't think he wants to run the Ravens offense around Lamar Jackson. Let's put it that way. So my question then becomes, Jaden Daniels, if he's the guy there, how well does he fit given the things he does well, given some of the things you see with him in terms of hitching and not necessarily getting the ball out on time, not necessarily deciphering coverages fast enough to get the ball out on time, how much of that is fixable, how much of it is just who he is as a player. I mean, that's the piece of this thing that I kind of came away interested in. And they didn't really tip their hand to the degree of, you know, do they like him or not? But I thought that was interesting in the sense that they are going to grade on these criteria. And in my mind, I have thought Drake May the whole time has been the best fit. And I know they have been very interested in him dating back to kind of some of the pre-evaluation stuff they did last year, when it was how much do we need to move up versus how much can we wait a year on this quarterback question. I have continued to think he is the best fit. McCarthy, I think some of it is what they thought of this pro day, or what they thought of, the workouts, because you want to see if all of the concepts that they run will translate with him, and can he make all the throws that they want. The other thing I'm really interested to see, because there is a world where they don't get a dancing partner for a trade. I don't think that'll happen. I think they'll make a big enough offer to move up and get their guy. But if all those doors shut, is there somebody at 11 that you like, or possibly is there somebody at 23 that you like, given the fact that there's that back of the first round group? I think probably Bo Nix, Michael Penix, the guys in that world, maybe a couple others that you talk about, that maybe Spencer Rattler probably is not in that group realistically, but you have that second tier, or at least that's kind of how it's being thought about, that could be sensible later in the first round. Would you like one of those players enough to go think about drafting one of those guys and making him the competitor with Sam Darnold? I think that's a lot of what they have to figure out too. And I am curious to see if they would go that route, because they've been very consistent saying, we're going to get our guy. We're not going to just take one to take one. I don't think they want to be the team that takes one every year just to have a new guy coming in. But you also need to get this done somehow or another. And I think they're walking that line of, we don't want to be forced into anything, but we don't have Kirk Cousins anymore, which was their plan. I mean, we should not forget,
right?
Their plan was Kirk Cousins comes back, they bring in a rookie and kind of have this two-step where Cousins is here now and then the rookie's there later. Obviously, that didn't happen. Obviously, Cousins had a voice in that and decided not to do it. But it does speed your clock up a little bit. And yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they react to that.
And this is some kind of a tertiary question, but who's the odd man out in the quarterback room right now, mm-hmm, if they draft somebody? Because they do have three guys under contract now, right? Yeah. Like Darnold. They still have Mullins under contract, albeit not for very much, and Jaren Hall, the rookie they drafted last year in the fifth round, but it's someone they believed in enough to, you know, start a couple games this year, by desperation more than anything. But how do you think the quarterback room sorts itself out if they draft a quarterback?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Nick Mullins certainly has been a guy that they have liked as a backup, but I think that's what they see him as. I don't think they see him as more than that. So I guess I would tend to think,
me too,
he's the odd man out. Yeah. Jaren Hall, they certainly did not want to have to start last year. That was not in the plan,
right,
whatsoever. And you can make the argument that starting him against the Packers at the end of the season was a bit of a desperation move as well. I still think they see development potential with him. And this, one of the new rules that the league passed, I think this got passed, or at least it was being talked about pretty seriously, is a change that now allows you to have a third quarterback that's on your practice squad. You don't have to have that guy on the 53-man roster anymore to elevate him for game day to be the emergency quarterback. So my guess is that would allow them to put Jaren Hall on the practice squad. And if they drafted a rookie, Sam Darnold is there. I think Nick Mullins probably is the odd man out. Maybe they trade him for something late in the draft.
Yeah.
That would be my read on it at the moment, but certainly that could change as things go.
Drake May and J.J. McCarthy, while not the running threats that Jaden Daniels is, they are mobile, relatively, yeah, so. They can run the ball. They can get you a first down. They can extend plays. The difference between them really is like age. Like they, you know, McCarthy's what, just turned 21, right? And Drake May's been there for a little while longer. It feels like if they wind up with one of those two guys, it feels like May could be more of a, hey, he could contend to play right away or pretty quickly versus McCarthy, given how young he is, even though he's got experience, even though he just won a national championship, feels like could be, hey, Darnold might be holding this down a little bit longer. Is that fair to say? Or is, I'm just trying to parse this out and kind of how they might be thinking about all this.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, the plan would be to not have to start a rookie. And you don't want to go into it thinking that the rookie is your only option and has to be ready to go right away. I think the hope is to continue to be patient and to have Sam Darnold start the season and hold down the fort until that rookie is ready to go. If the rookie is ready to go in training camp or the preseason, I don't think they're going to hold him back. I think if they get somebody in that looks so good and looks so ready to go, they will probably just roll with that player. The question is, will that happen? Number one, and how will that player look? Number two, you know, how's JJ looking? How's Drake looking? I mean, we can bring all the old Teddy tropes back.
Yes.
For this one. Yeah, I guess I would tend to think that May is probably a little more ready in the sense, I mean, he's young, but the arm to make the throws that they would want, I think is certainly not a question with him. Yeah, I mean, the thing you'd have to coach with him is he does take some chances with the ball, and you have to decide how much of that you want to keep and how much of that you want to refine. But the big arm, being able to make some of the throws that he does, I mean, I have to imagine Kevin O'Connell looks at him and sees a lot of Matthew Stafford.
Okay.
So, yep. I mean, that would be the thing that would lead me to think if they get him, they're going to say full steam ahead.
Royal Credit Union smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA. A
few more things. Speaking of JJ, Justin Jefferson, the known JJ, they talked about him and kind of his involvement in the process. Thought that was interesting. Not that it should be surprising that he's in the loop, but they're being very intentional about this, it would seem, to make sure their wide receiver is happy and informed about what they're doing.
Yeah, they are. And I think you have, I mean, it's, you have a wide receiver that needs a contract. You have a wide receiver that was on record as being a fan of Kirk Cousins, who had thrown him, I think, all but two of his touchdown passes in his career. So there is, I mean, you know, they're talking about certainly, he's a captain. He's a pillar of our leadership. He's put up all these numbers. It's the right thing to do to keep him involved. And I get that. But the reality, too, is they need to get a contract done with him. And the timing of it allows him to wait a little bit and see how this plays out and say, am I happy with the way the quarterback situation looks or am I not? And I think a lot of Kevin O'Connell's approach to this is, if I keep you in the loop, you are hearing about what they did at quarterback from me before you're hearing about it from anybody else. And then I can frame the message how I want and probably in a way that says, hey, this is going to be a good thing for you. And he talked a little bit this week about Jefferson possibly being excited about mentoring a young quarterback. And Jefferson is going to be asked to do a little bit more of that because this is not a locker room that has Kirk Cousins, Jordan Hicks, Danielle Hunter. I mean, a lot of longtime players. And then you add Adam Thielen, Eric Kendricks to that from the year before, a lot of the consistent voices in that room are not there anymore. So there is going to be more of that on Justin Jefferson in general. And as he's trying to recreate some level of chemistry or rapport with a new quarterback, it only makes sense to get his input and have him on board with it because so much of their offense is based around maximizing everything that he does. Why would you not do everything you can to say, let's optimize this for you? And, you know, maybe make you happy enough in the process to sign a contract.
Yes. This offseason feels like it's so framed around the quarterback, but they've done a lot of things other than quarterback, a lot of defensive reinforcements, a lot of 1-year deals, but, you know, guys like Grenard on longer term contracts, things like that. The Darnold contract was weird. You reported that they had some threw some void years onto that. Like they appear to be a team that isn't just going to kind of say, 24 can be whatever it can be. They still seem like they're intent on competing in 24 based on the moves they're making, even if they are starting a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the void year stuff, I don't think is a reaction or is necessarily a tell as far as what they think of this year, because I think philosophically they see void years as like, why wouldn't we? The cap keeps going up. If we could push money down the road, effectively, it's an inflation reduction, that the cost of the player stays the same while the amount of money that you have to spend is going up. So you are basically discounting future years of the contract or future cash, I guess, by or future cap money. It's not real cash at that point.
It's not real.
You get
cash,
my point.
Yes.
Salary cap cash. But you are discounting it by pushing those void years out. So I think philosophically, they see a benefit in doing that. You have to be careful with it, obviously, because then the signing bonus is not hitting in annual installments. It's hitting all at once when the contract is up. But I think we see them do that because they see the financial value in it as much as it is about, let's push money around for this year to compete. That said, Mark Wilf said again yesterday that I think we can be competitive this year, even if we have a young quarterback, and it is always going to be our goal to win every game. He said it's important that our fans know that. There is not a thought in ownership's head about, well, you know, this needs to be a rebuilding year, or the idea of tanking. Not that you would be tanking if you get your quarterback, but
right.
This whole thing of it can't happen for us this year is not really how they go about it, because I think they fundamentally believe that fans want to come and watch a product that has a chance to win every week. So you can argue if that is counterproductive in the long term, if you're sort of, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, so to speak, but that is how they think about it. And I think it does mean, especially with this group still having a lot of talent on offense, that they're not going to just kind of punt on the year and say, well, we got to worry about 2025. We'll go get them then.
Final thing, Ben, from the meetings, a couple rule changes, the kickoff change, the hip drop tackle. What do you make of that? Do the Vikings have any opinions on that? I saw Harrison Smith tweeted about the tackle rule, things like that. How do you think that plays out just from a safety standpoint, or from a strategy standpoint, I guess, too?
Yeah, I mean, the hip drop tackle thing, Harrison Smith is not probably going to be a fan of that. I mean, we've had these conversations a lot over the years, and Harrison Smith is not a guy that's wanted to just go knock people's heads off and doesn't care what happens. It's more, but I've had some very thoughtful conversations with him about this over the years. And his thing is always, I want to adapt with the rules, but you are putting players in positions where what you're asking us to do to make a safe legal tackle is so awkward or so divorced from reality in terms of the way players' bodies move on the field that it just doesn't work. And he wasn't a fan of this. I mean, he had a multi-leveled, I thought, kind of nuanced opinion of it on Twitter. It was basically, hey, I get it. The offensive stars are the ones that pay everybody's bills.
Right.
So it's good for the game if those players are on the field, but it makes it hard for us to do our jobs. I think Josh Metellus chimed in with something to that effect as well. And I see the point. I mean, it does make it hard for defensive players to do their jobs and be able to make tackles effectively and safely. But I get why the league does it. I think it was only a matter of time with some of the things that we saw last year with that particular tackle and play. The thing is, though, when you're emphasizing more of the rugby style tackling and saying, let's not have the head involved, the constant don't do this, don't do this, don't do this means that players are constantly having to readjust what they've learned, either what they grew up learning, which in a lot of cases is not great technique, as we've seen, I think, with Caleb Evans, he's had to relearn a lot of it, or they relearn things to adjust to last year's moving target. So it does make it very difficult in that sense. I'm interested to see how that plays out. Very interested to see how this kickoff thing goes, because it is going to look drastically different than anything you've seen in an NFL game. It's you have to watch the XFL to kind of get an idea of it, but it is going to be a complete revamping of that play. And the NFL's hope is that it leads to returns again. It's not just automatically the ball's being kicked out of the end zone as a touchback. They're hoping that kickoffs will be returned again. There will be safe collisions on the play as opposed to kind of what it's been in the past when the guy's running 30 yards downfield before there's a hit. And I think they feel like if you can do that again, it adds an element back to the game. I mean, you know, Darren Rizzi, the Saints special teams coordinator, talked about this morning in the sense that Devin Hester's going into the Hall of Fame this year. It's appropriate that this gets changed in a year that we're recognizing one of the great return men in the history of the game. The Vikings have had a lot of good ones over the years too, whether it's Cordarrelle Patterson, Percy Harvin, you know, Marcus Sherrill's more on punts, but they've had a number of dynamic return men over the years too. And I think I like it, because otherwise it was getting to be such a formality that the touchback was going to happen, that I think it makes some sense to try this and see if it brings kickoff returns back to the game, just for a strategic component of the in-game management of roster building, because I think this is going to change special teams a little bit. And it probably just adds a little more scoring to the game as well, which the NFL never minds doing. I mean, they basically said that out loud today, that touchbacks now move to the 30-yard line. They talked about going to the 35. Putting people closer to the end zone one way or the other is something the league is very interested in doing. And I think their hope is that in addition to being a safer play, and we'll see if that actually holds true, but they think it will, and their hope is that it juices scoring a little bit too.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. We'll see how the quarterback stuff plays out for the Vikings over the next month. Ben Guessing will have you covered. I hope you catch your breath a little bit, Ben. I'm sure there's that's about a month between now and the draft, so maybe you got a little bit of time, but catch your breath. You're done with the meetings for a while. Unless you can tag along with KOC, I think you can maybe kind of get ready for the draft, and we'll go from there. But appreciate you hopping on.
Yeah, I got to fly out to Boston in a few weeks to go run a couple miles. But be nice and easy.
Good luck with that, too. I'm sure we'll talk to you before then, but take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, man. Thanks.
Great stuff from Ben. Like I mentioned at the jump today, it is Drake May's Pro Day. Like Ben said at the beginning of our segment, though, don't pay too much attention to the Pro Days. For some of these quarterbacks, they're scripted. It's not like the Vikings are going to make or break their decision on these guys based on that. They want to get to know these guys. They want to run them through their own drills, ask them what they would do in this scenario, that scenario. That said, Drake May is especially interesting. Andrew Kramer, our colleague who also covers the Vikings along with Ben, interesting piece today highlighting just how well new quarterbacks coach Josh McCown knows Drake May, has worked with Drake May going back to his high school days. If you want to connect some of the dots in terms of who the Vikings are looking at, and Ben already said on this segment the Vikings have been interested in Drake May for a while, that is one more piece of it. So go read Andrew's story about that, because that shed some pretty interesting light on just how connected Josh McCown already is to Drake May, the quarterback prospect out of North Carolina. Let's finish and put two things in the cooler. Number one, transfer portal chatter with the Gophers men's basketball team. Joshua Ola-Joseph transferring out, entering the portal. Not a surprise there. His playing time was severely curtailed in the second half of the Big Ten season. Had been playing quite a bit in the year and a half before that. He is entering the portal, will head out. Again, not a surprise there. I think we've kind of hinted at that might be the outcome of all this, that the Gophers are maybe looking for a little bit of a different direction with their big men. Lo and behold, former North Dakota State big man, Waseca native Andrew Morgan is going to visit the Gophers today. At least that's the plan. 6'10", 1 year of eligibility left. Maybe that is a better fit for Ben Johnson's Gophers next year. A little bit more size inside, the ability to guard and play against some of the bigger players in the Big Ten when the Gophers just didn't really have much of an answer for that in a lot of games last year. So maybe that's a potential for a one-for-one swap, big for a big, and a different style of play. Gopher men's hockey, let's finish there. They play against Nebraska-Omaha in Sioux Falls in the regional today. Win that game, then they're one game away from the Frozen Four in St. Paul. Huge game tonight. I believe that's a 7:30 start. Randy Johnson has you covered. Go back and listen to earlier this week. Randy and I talked quite a bit about college hockey, Gophers hockey. If you missed that show, maybe go check that out before tonight's game. I don't know. It's a different Gophers team than it was last year. They're the two seeds. Last year, they were the overwhelming favorite, or at least one of the favorites to win it all. They had so much talent, such, you know, tons of guys with NHL potential, guys who are now starring in the NHL, including Brock Faber with the Wild right now. They had tons of guys like that. This year, a little bit more spread out, a little bit more, you know, kind of a grinding game sometimes, but still the really good goaltending with Justin Close. If you go on a run this year, if your goalie gets hot, you can easily get to the Frozen Four. This is a very good team. Still plenty of talent on this team, even if it's not quite the name brand talent yet that it was last year. They've got the potential. They can get there this year again, and if they do, it will be back in St. Paul. So check that out tonight. Gophers against Omaha in Sioux Falls. That will do it for me today. Like I said, lots to get to tomorrow. Going to talk high school sports and transfers with Star Tribune high school sports editor Kevin Bertels. We will also have plenty of talk on the Twins opener, Gophers men's hockey in the NCAA tournament, all that good stuff. Maybe some breathless reporting from Drake May's Pro Day. We'll see about that as well. Until then, I am Michael Rand, back at it again on Friday.